out here.
Captain!
Morton.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. It's the Max Fun Drive, Adam.
It sure is.
We're recording this on Monday morning, the first day of the Max Fun Drive, but folks will mostly be hearing this on Tuesday, the second day of the Max Fun Drive. There's only 2 weeks a year where we do this. We need people to head to MaximumFun.org/donate and sign up to support the show on a monthly basis and, pick this show. Why don't you throw Greatest Gen and Friendly Fire in there when you pick?
If you support one, why not support them all?
Yeah.
Don't make the one other Uxbridge Shimoda show that you're not supporting feel bad.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
It's like being asked to pick our favorite child. We can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, I could.
This is a listener-supported show. It's why, when we do have advertising, it is very late in the episode. It's not like the main thing that you hear. There aren't tons of ad breaks. And, supporting things that are important to you with your money is a good way to live life, you know?
Much like Star Trek Discovery itself,
yeah.
Things of quality cost a little bit of money.
Yeah. And unlike Star Trek Discovery, we give this away for free and trust you to do the right thing. But the right thing to do is head to MaximumFun.org/donate right now to support the show. And, you're subsidizing it being free for other people, which is a business model that CBS is not subscribed to.
Right. We'll be back at you a little bit later to tell you about all of the great rewards in store for those that support The Greatest Discovery. But for now, we've got brand new Star Trek to talk about, Ben.
We sure do. And we're looking at each other during today.
Yeah, I took a field trip down to L.A. for reasons I've been NDA'd against talking about.
Yeah. I think we could say we're going to go on a little undercover mission inside the pocket, right?
Yeah, that's something that I feel comfortable saying.
Yeah. We have a friend who was having a conversation with the person who is currently, like, they're going to have an official Star Trek podcast, and they were like looking for somebody to host it, and he put our names forward, and they said, "Oh, we're aware of them. Little too edgy for us."
That is so classic.
I like that the pocket doesn't want us. Also,
I don't blame them either.
I don't either. No, I mean, if you've got shareholders, we're not the people you want. You want to bring to them. But it was a nice, vote of confidence. Like, yeah, like, we do dick and fart jokes.
It feels like we're doing something right. If they've considered us briefly and then dismissed us for being too edgy. Also, since when is being funny edgy?
Exactly!
It is hard for me to imagine, doing this show in a way where somebody would then have to, listen and... I'm sure they have standards and practices, attorneys that have to go over every piece of content that they put out, no matter where it goes. So some lawyer somewhere has to listen to us and be like, no, no, no.
I mean, this was sort of our reason for being from the start. Like, if you're making an officially sanctioned Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek podcast, you would never want it to be anything other than effusively positive.
Right.
And this was the whole reason that you and I wanted to start our own show, was so that we didn't have to do that.
Right. We can say what we actually feel about the show.
It would actually be a worse career move for us than having a Star Trek podcast to begin with would be to do the official one.
Wow, it's hard to imagine what would be a worse career move for us than having a Star Trek podcast, you said it.
It would totally sacrifice all of the goodwill we've built up to now.
Yeah.
It would be bad.
Good will or just will?
Force of will.
well, so... So I guess I don't know if this NDA will have an expiration, but maybe at some point we'll be able to talk about what we're doing today.
The moment that it expires is the day that I will be willing to talk about it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that moment. The moment of expiration. But do you want to talk about this episode, Adam?
Yeah, let's get to it, Ben. Let's go ahead and talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 9, Project Daedalus. It's a Jonathan Frakes episode, Ben.
Yeah, if you want a Jonathan Frakes shot, just refer to the opening of this episode. Shuttlecraft comes into the shuttle bay, and we get a super duper Frakesy god shot of like over top of the shuttlecraft with the camera swooping down, and Admiral Bob has come aboard the Disco.
She arrives in kind of a camo shuttle.
Yeah, the shuttles in this show are so sporty.
Yeah,
they really have like very fun paint jobs.
It kind of looks like the Van Halen Frankenstein guitar color scheme.
It is very, I'd say like almost of all of the kind of strong choices that Discovery makes, probably the most un-Star Trek seeming one, like what the shuttlecraft look like.
It's fortunate for Admiral Bob that the Discovery shuttle bay doors are always open.
Yeah.
Permanently.
Yeah. Well, they got something got jammed in there.
Legit question. Have they ever been closed? Is the Discovery a ship without a shuttle bay door and it just uses
the force field?
A force field?
I don't know.
If it was ever closed, it was a long ass time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of a time when it was closed.
Yeah.
The only thing I can remember about it is that it took a really long time for the doors to close, and then when they like finally click shut, Chewie goes,
Really glad to be doing the show in person with you again, Ben. What a delight.
Admiral Bob has brought her balls aboard, and she has brought these balls to let them orbit around Spock's head.
Yeah, those were in a travel case she brought aboard.
Yeah.
You think those balls don't just live on the Disco?
I mean, they seem to be her balls.
Do you think that this is another example of Section 31 technology, or is this pretty standard issue Federation balls?
I don't know. I mean, she's been established to be like a psychologist or a psychiatrist or something, right? She's got before she was an admiral, she was a head shrinker.
Mm.
But this is like a lie detector, essentially.
Right.
And I really liked that you understand this to be a lie detector without any, like, there's only the sound effect for that was a true answer. You never hear the false answer sound effect.
Yeah.
You never, like, there's almost nothing to go on that it's a lie detector, but it's a lie detector.
Is that a diegetic sound, like where the person being... the person answering the questions hears if they're doing a good job or not? That would be so stressful in either case, right?
Yeah, I kind of feel like it would. But Spock, like, I mean, nobody is going to pass a lie detector test quite like a Vulcan, right?
Right.
It's like that time Data had to lie to everybody, you know?
Right.
It's like, it's just, it's too easy.
I mean, as clinical as this is in practice, the door is not closed and locked, and Michael Burnham is able to walk right in and interrupt the proceedings.
Yeah, you would think that they would control the environment a little bit more than that.
Right.
But, you know, she also walks in, like, when Admiral Bob has gotten all of the information that she needs, which is information we already have, but, like, it's nice to feel like there's some level of scientific scrutiny being applied to Spock's claims, like nobody got killed at the facility, and nobody, and you know, he's the good guy that we've always suspected him to be, and not the bad guy that Section 31 is casting him as.
I've asked this every episode this season, though: where are the bodies?
Right, like, is the idea that, like, everybody's seen this clip? Because we see a clip of Spock, like, shooting a bunch of people.
Yeah, it's pretty rugged.
It's the same clip we saw in Michael Burnham's, like, memory trip on Talos, where he nerve-pinched everybody.
Right.
but in the surveillance camera version, he is like neck kicking and shooting people on like flaming ember mode.
Once Spock shot the first Doctor, he didn't hesitate. He killed the other two because what's the difference?
Don't leave any witnesses. It turned into a murder one beef for him. Yeah, shame to mess up all that crazy person writing on the floor that he'd been doing.
Yeah.
But them's the breaks, I guess.
Once I learned I was sane, to have remained confined would have been unproductive.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, what he tells her is that he left of his own volition and it was legal, but it's a bit of a puzzle. Like, she's showing this doctored clip to Pike, and she's like, it's not doctored from what we can tell. And that's a scary idea. Like, the idea that, like, Spock truly believes himself not to have killed these people except for there's video evidence of him doing it.
Right. What happens when two pieces of evidence are both true at the same time, that right. are contradictory.
Yeah. She's like, I'm pretty sure that this isn't deep fakes, but maybe it is.
This is the part of the episode that begins to tell the story of Control.
Yeah.
Control being the computer system in which the Admiralty gives intelligence, and then Control spits out advice yeah. on what to do, and that advice is then combined with the Admiralty's experience in order to create a course of action for the Federation.
We've heard some talk about this. Like, Giorgio at some point criticized the reliance on Control that Section 31 displayed. She's like, in my universe, we control the AIs, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And it seems like Leland is a real, like, Control partisan.
If Section 31 is a secret, I think we can assume that very few people know about Control's existence, right?
Yeah.
And so if you were just someone on a ship out there doing Starfleet, like,
taking a great big Starfleet.
The idea that your orders are generated by a combination of AI and an admiral, and that is unknown to you, is a real freak out to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Admiral Bob seems to have like a different relationship with it than some of her counterparts. Like, she makes the case that, like, you feed in information and, like, it provides useful context and stuff, but ultimately, like, it's the admirals that should be making the decisions. But she's...
And there are four admirals left. Right. Like, at this point in the episode that we know about that actually have this sort of interaction with Control. This is another question I have. Like, there seem to be few and fewer with this relationship to Control, that it's becoming more and more dangerous, right?
She tried to log into Control a couple of weeks ago, and it rejected her password, and she filled out the thing to have a password reset emailed to her, but she's just been waiting for this email for like 2 weeks.
Where the hell is Starfleet's IT department on this? Like, this is terrible work by Admiral Bob to let 2 weeks go by, right?
Yeah.
This is bad.
She has come to the disco so that she can go with them to Section 31 HQ and arrest Admiral Pitar, who is the Vulcan lady that we've met in hologram previously. Pitar is not only an admiral, but also a logic extremist, which seems like problematic.
Yeah.
It's like when we invaded Iraq and there were like a couple of generals in George W. Bush's Pentagon that were like using the language of the Crusades to describe what we were doing. And everybody's like, whoa, no, this is not good.
If Starfleet has four admirals total of yeah. the level that could interact with Control, I might not make one of them an extremist of any kind.
Yeah. Admiral Pitar? More like Admiral Patak.
That's a joke that would fly on a mainstream Star Trek podcast blessed by...
yeah. Standards and practices yeah. would be like, is Patak offensive? I'm yeah. not sure.
We don't casually throw around the P word around here.
No. We have a scene where Arium is like kind of cleaning out the hard drive. She's got her head in like a device and kind of like a...
Looks a little bit clip showy.
Like an eye exam kind of deal where yeah. you like put your chin in the little chin rester.
She's clip showing herself.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a memory of back when she wasn't a roboticized person.
Yeah.
This is the last memory she had with, I guess, her husband before the terrifying sounding shuttle accident that caused her to have to be rebuilt as a robot lady. I feel like, this is like the Arium episode. We've had no Arium episodes up till now, and then we get this one. And spoiler alert, probably the last one.
They really have a ton of work to do this yeah. episode to build her up.
Yeah. She and Tilly are revealed to be like thick as thieves. And there's kind of like a quad, right? Like Detmer and Owo and Tilly and Arium are in a bunch of these memories together, and like in the way they interact. This episode kind of establishes that they're like a really like tight group of friends, and that Tilly and Arium are like the card sharks of the group. Right. What's the game they play? Cotiscot?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess they're both like just real good at calculating the odds.
I don't know what Cotiscot is.
Yeah, I think it's a Star Trek game.
It's Star Trek Canasta.
Space Canasta.
Yeah.
My memories are not going anywhere.
When you have 50 minutes, Ben, to construct a character's backstory, make you care about this person in order to make you feel something upon their death.
Yeah.
Like there are ways that you do this, right?
Yeah.
You place the character in proximity to other characters that you know better.
Right.
You make
them save a cat.
Right. And then you also give this character totems or objects, right? Objects
yeah.
that flesh out their backstory a little bit. Some of these items include like shells from that beach.
Yeah, she's got a little sand vial.
Yeah, fairly stark quarters, but she does have a pod.
Yeah.
Which... you only see the outside of, but I kind of wanted to know a little bit more about that pod.
Yeah, I wanted to know about that pod also. It kind of looked a little Aliens pod, like the kind of pod you get frozen in for a long space journey.
Yeah.
But it was just a item that was in the corner of the room, and the camera doesn't focus on it, and we don't get anything more than it is there.
I mean, you know
who else has a pod? Is Darth Vader.
Hmm.
Do you think that there's a scene where somebody...
she takes off her helmet.
Somebody comes in and we see gore face Arium before the helmet gets put back on? That would have been nice.
Yeah.
What's under that?
I think it would have made the viewer suspicious of her
yeah.
from jump.
Yeah.
I like the idea that when they recover Arium's body from space, they can just put it right in the pod and then shoot it back out.
Yeah,
during the funeral.
Oh yeah, this is both a bed and a casket.
She doesn't have a lot of shit to pack up. You can probably fit it all in that pod.
She has a really big room.
Yeah.
Given the fact that Michael Burnham, who's like I guess the second officer on the
yeah.
ship, has a room that she shares with an ensign.
Arium's a commander, though. There are kind of a lot of commanders on Discovery right now.
They have they're sort of misbalanced toward the top of the
yeah.
It's a situation where it starts to feel more and more ridiculous that either Burnham or Saru have not been promoted to the big chair yet.
Right.
Who knows? Anyways, so they head off to go to Section 31. We learn a little bit about the base. It used to be, I guess it was an alien prison.
It used to be a prison, but now it belonged to us.
Yeah. Yeah, and somebody set it up the bomb because...
Yeah.
because there are a lot of mines present in the vicinity of this thing. So many mines that when Michael Burnham comes up on the bridge, she's like, "That's the most defensive devices I've seen in one place." Thank you for the exposition, Michael Burnham.
There's just a passing reference to these mines that goes something like they were not built by the Federation even.
Yeah.
So they got someone else to build them.
Yeah, or they figured out a way to take control of the entire minefield.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael Burnham and Spock have been having some pretty heated arguments. Like there's that scene in Engineering when Stamets has to like kick them out of engineering because they're either being too quiet or too loud and not just right.
Yeah.
Burnham like is really persisting in a way that I think is cool with Spock. You know, like he doesn't act like her interactions are welcome. You know, they've been ordered to work together on the figure out the Red Angel project, but he wants her to know that this is happening under protest from him.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I feel like she just really shows him a lot of heart in the way that she insists on continuing to work with him and like suggesting new strategies. Like the whole chess game is like, you know, he's very like petulant and angry about it, but she's like, "I am trying to help you figure this out."
Yeah.
And I really like that about her, you know, that she's willing to put up with his anger with her in order to like solve this problem and rebuild their relationship.
I mean, that's the core of interesting television and movie conflicts, right?
Yeah.
People who don't want to be together but are forced to due to circumstance.
One shot I wanted to talk to you about was like, so they play this chess game and they're like, Spock is either playing a very, pursuing a very strange and unconventional strategy or is just fucking around. And eventually he just like, he flips out and like smashes the chess set and storms out of the room. And like Michael Burnham gets called up to the bridge at that point. But there is a shot that lingers on the smashed chess set. And there are a lot of lens flares in this television program.
Ooh, boy. This episode especially.
But this shot, the lens flare on the chess set is bright red.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that was intentional, had something to do with the Red Angel in, like, are they using lens flares that intentionally, or is it just we, you know, have a bunch of filter packs and we drop them all over the edit timeline?
Were one to count the pieces on the ground, would there be 7?
I don't know.
Is that something the show does?
Yeah.
Yeah, Spock really does the line must be drawn here at the end of this chess game.
Yeah.
A scene of extreme emotional prejudice that Frakes directed in Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah. Like
he's someone who directs characters in these moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And Michael Burnham does say, "You smashed your little ships."
Yeah.
And he goes, "What? They're chess pieces. You think these are ships, Michael? What?" I really like Stamets' interactions with Spock in this episode, because I feel like they are both characters that are emotionally wired differently from other people on the ship, but they're really different from each other also.
The show has done something to Stamets that reminds me a lot of what the show did with Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine.
This will be perfect.
Which is, like, don't forget that Stamets was a fucking dick.
Yeah.
In the first season, and people hated to be around him, and now he is so sad and vulnerable that you almost forget that there was ever a version of him like that. And I kind of wish there was more back and forth in his character to remind us that he was this way.
Yeah, I mean, he does tell them, like, stop being weird and silent over there, but that's like, it doesn't feel...
Season 1 Stamets would have annihilated them with a line of dialogue that way, and he's just a little... he's just wounded, you know?
Yeah. we get a brief mention of the situation with Culber from Spock, because Stamets is saying, like, Michael Burnham, like, really loves you, and even if like you are angry with her, like, she risked a lot to to save you. And he kind of gives that same gift back to Stamets when he says, like, I saw Culber, like, moving out of your apartment, like, packing up his black toothbrush, and like, maybe the what he needs is time to, like, reconnect with himself rather than time to reconnect with you. And I thought that was interesting. I don't know, man. I think you might be doing a power hour at the end of this season.
Stamets is like, what the fuck do you know about relationships like this? Why don't you police your own business, dude?
Anyways.
But that's how it is, right? Like, you always see the angles better when they're not your own.
Yeah. And sometimes that third party can, like, blow your mind in a way, you know?
Yeah.
The idea of, like, resenting a partner who is going through something because they're not, like, fully present and fully themselves is, like, I think something that a lot of relationships have to grapple with.
Right.
You know, if a partner gets sick or whatever, or their parent gets sick, and when you're in a relationship, it's partly a partnership, but partly it's a very self-serving thing. Like, there are things that we get out of relationships, and when we stop getting those out of a relationship for a time, it can breed resentment, which is really poisonous.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is, like, such an interesting storyline for, like, dealing with that in a pretty grown-up way.
Well, Spock represents the poisoning that comes from that kind of resentment,
yeah,
like, over the course of decades.
Right. They get to this FOB. They're told by Admiral Pitar on the FaceTime that they're in big trouble, right? Because is this, like, do they talk to her after they've dealt with the mines or before?
Yeah, they dodge them all and then make it to the center, and then that's when they talk to Pitar.
Yeah, the mine dodging stuff was, like, fun to watch, but it seemed a little dumb.
The thing that doesn't quite hold together about this scene is, like, how many mines does it take to destroy a starship?
Because a lot of them hit Disco.
Like, 20 of them hit. And so, like, how great are these mines, actually?
Yeah, these are garbage mines.
They're kind of shitty mines, I think.
This is like a kid mining their house by putting those little snaps,
yeah,
on the floor, and they're,
yeah,
yeah. What was that loudish snapping noise when I stepped on that thing?
It kind of smells like sulfur. Also, Pike, I mean, now might be a good time to close that shuttle pod door.
Yeah,
you know, maybe stop the mines from getting inside. That'd be bad.
Scan for any other weapons on this base.
So yeah, they put together an away mission. It's initially going to be Saru and the gang, but Saru wants, he has a project he wants to work on the ship.
Also, Saru probably looks pretty ridiculous in the siege armor that everyone has to wear.
Yeah. Have we seen Saru in a spacesuit yet?
I don't think so.
Interesting.
They got to give him the Worf helmet.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about the spacesuits is that they have, like, four little pips on the breastplate, and I thought those should be lit up according to rank.
They really should, but they're not.
They're all four lit up.
Yeah.
On everybody. So it's the red shirt lady from Pike's crew.
Nan.
Who's Barzan, we established in this episode. Mm-hmm. So she's the same as that lady who was trying to sell the wormhole.
Right.
In TNG.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if we've brought up or not, but, like, I kind of suspected as much, and it's really fun to see that paid off.
Yeah.
I don't remember the Barzan as being part of the Federation, but I guess there are mechanisms for becoming an officer in Starfleet even if you don't come from the Federation, right?
Yeah.
Like, if Nog can be on that track, so can a Barzan, I imagine.
Why not a Barzan?
Yeah. She's blazing a trail. So it's her, Arium, and Burnham. And Nan has been keeping an eye on Arium because Arium has had her little glitch outs and been downloading software. And it's pretty clear that Nan, knows something is up with her.
Yeah, lest you forget, Nan was the Enterprise security officer brought on board, and she's been given very little to do on Discovery.
Yeah, she's not, at the tactical station.
Yeah.
Risa's still there, so she's been, on the bridge a lot and just kind of, keeping an eye on shit in a way that I kind of like.
She's not very sneaky, though.
No. But
this scene aboard the station is great.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of Aliens vibes to me. Besides the obvious Star Trek VI vibes with the gravity boots and the floating blood, the EV suit with the video screen and the heartbeats and stuff, all of that plays great.
Can you think of another away mission we have ever seen that was three women?
Wow, no.
I think this might, I don't know, but it feels like it might be the first time that's ever happened in Star Trek. If you can think of another one, tweet at us. I'd be curious.
Hmm.
All the life support stuff is off on this station. And so it's icy and there's no gravity. They have to use their moon boots to walk around. And it is legitimately creepy feeling.
Yeah, it's very haunted. Speaking of extra content, this is what Arium's been doing. She's been downloading out of the Sphere feed.
Yeah.
Everything having to do with AI.
Right.
And her mission has been to deposit this information into control.
Yeah. We get a couple of big revelations. One is that she is doing that. Tilly has kind of figured out what she was doing data-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Saru has figured out what the secret is with all these videos, because when they talk to the Admiral Patak on the view screen, he could tell that she was lying because he can see, and apparently the cameras that they use for FaceTime can see things that the human eye cannot, which are changes in body heat. And when he played back the footage of Spock beating the shit out of everybody and then killing them in the facility.
Right.
That footage also does not stand up to the scrutiny of the Kelpian eyeball. So he's able to prove that that was a hologram that they were watching, and so was Patar. And so what they start to piece together is that control, the computer that Section 31 and the entire Admiralty uses to run Starfleet, is attempting to become sentient. It is and I'd say the first time I watched this episode, I was oh, fuck, it's a fucking Matrix story. Are they seriously doing Terminator? But I think this is a pretty interesting take on that. The subtlety of it was lost on me the first time I watched it, but second time through, I was the idea of a computer, an emergent property of a sufficiently complicated computer is that it, wants to become smarter and better.
Yeah.
Is really interesting to me.
And that it knows, a foundational limitation to its evolution would be that ability, that last leap into full sentience.
Yeah. So it, it killed all those admirals. They find them all popsicles floating around in the station.
The ones that weren't frozen to death have been cut in half by doors.
Yeah.
Which is
it's a hell of a combination.
It watched Starship Troopers and saw what happened to the captain of the ship that Denise Richards is on, and was cool.
I love that shit.
Verhoeven, he loves using blood.
In pretty quick succession, it's been revealed that these are holograms, and also Nan's facial piercings have been ripped out.
Yeah.
Thus commencing a pretty fully developed fight sequence between Arium and Burnham.
The parallels to the Matrix have been drawn a bunch of times this season, but mm-hmm. this is a very Matrixy fight scene also.
Yeah, you and I watched this episode together, and I was a little confused because it looked like they had restored gravity, and yet Arium punches Burnham across the room in a 70% of gravity kind of way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
In a way that would like shatter every bone in her body.
Yeah.
Maybe the spacesuit is doing something.
Maybe.
I don't know. Speaking of the spacesuit, if the thing that's in Nan's face is helping her breathe this atmosphere, why doesn't she just redeploy her helmet?
Bingo. Yeah.
Like, you need us, the on-payroll pedants, to be catching these things.
You really do. See, like, we would be too problematic to host the official Star Trek podcast, but I think you want us to pedantically argue these points.
Yeah, yeah.
Before a show goes into production, right?
Yeah. That's, we'll be edgy in private.
Burnham does a pretty fair job in kicking the shit out of Arium, at least to the degree that, like, she beats her into a broom closet.
She beats her into the broom closet, but also, like, hits her with the phaser, like, four or five times as she baps her back.
Yeah.
Which means that Arium can really take it. Like, I think that the other spacesuit element that I felt was missing was she's now in an airlock, and she's like, her body is still doing the bad thing of giving access to this data to control, but they, like, Tilly gets on the radio and gets Arium, the good person, back, at least as far as like she's talking. So she's like doing this bad stuff, but going like, you got to blow me out into space. Like, I can't stop myself. And one thing that we know from the comics, at least Mirror Universe Arium has the ability to like deploy a gas mask on her face.
Right.
Like, it can it comes out of her body and covers her mouth and nose.
And Arium in this scene says that she suspended that.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's turned off her helmet.
Shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
All of these threads are so difficult to tie up in this scene because it's unclear the level of control she has over her body, like where that begins and ends for her, because she has control over her helmet, but she doesn't have control over the hands and the upload that's happening.
Yeah.
We find out later that Arium was able to upload only 25% of the information into control that was requested.
Right. She's begging, and this is like a very suspenseful scene. It's like we're watching the little bar creep across the screen, and she's yelling at Michael Burnham, "Everything is because of you. Research 9/11 truth."
You have to find Project Daedalus.
Oh no, research Project Daedalus. Those are the two things we get. I think that this kind of goes to your theory in a big way, right? That the Red Angel is inextricably linked to Burnham and Spock in some important way.
Yeah, they really, it's not just my theory. The show beats us over the head with that because every scene where Spock and
that's inescapable
Stamets talk,
at this point.
Stamets is like, it has to, there must be a reason it's chosen you.
Right.
Specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Project Daedalus, the title of the episode, and it's the
last line of the show.
Yeah. She gets blown out into space. I really thought it would have been hilarious because, like, we see the little portal that she gets blown out of, and there's a couple of mines visible floating in space just outside of it, and I thought it would have just been, like, so fucking rugged if they just smashed into her.
Yeah, they just tore her body apart in space.
RSVP Arium. We barely knew her.
Yeah, barely at all.
We get like a little glimpse in her eye as she plays back her wedding video on the beach.
What do you do if you kill a character that we don't know very well and you want to evoke some feeling?
Yeah.
You give us the reactions of the people who did know her well. And we take nice long looks at everyone in reaction to this. Detmer full-on grabs Pike's arm during this scene.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty intense. I mean, it worked on me, man. Like,
yeah.
I felt real feels when she went away. And I guess now the only computer person is that person with the giant computer head.
Yeah.
We only see them in, like, the deep background ever, but there's, like, an iMac head person. There's also that, like, Mon Calamari character that we've been seeing on the bridge a lot. Right. Couldn't we just get a cut to that person going, it's a trap! Just like drop out of warp and there's a bunch of mines around a star base. Get that person saying it's a trap.
Easy enough to do. They cut that scene out, obviously.
Yeah.
It feels like the show did that thing that 24 did when they killed Edgar.
Uh-huh.
They gave us a musicless credit sequence at the end, kind of an in memoriam style.
Yeah.
Like quiet credits is kind of a thing that a show does every once in a while to observe the passing of a character.
I feel like it's really effective when it's just smashed to credits.
Yeah.
And when there is the little next time on in between the end of the show and that, it,
agreed,
it undercuts the emotional weight of that.
Does, yeah.
And I kind of wish that that wasn't such a big part of the show. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's the only way we get to our vasectomy every episode. So I guess we need it.
Yeah. Definitely need the vasectomy.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
I did like the episode. I mean, I am just personally too much of a cynic to allow for a show's strategy under these circumstances to manipulate me into feeling for a character that we just don't know and we never knew.
Yeah.
To the degree that I allowed the show's strategy to work on me, I thought they did a fine job. Like, what else could they do in 50 minutes?
Right.
I thought every opportunity the show had to create the feeling of buildup and loss about Arium was well done.
Yeah.
It is unfortunate that these moments weren't sprinkled a little more liberally throughout the series. Like this group of four that you described earlier is something that we could have seen even once in this series that we haven't.
Yeah.
Like that fight scene where we saw Culber beat the shit out of Ash Tyler, like put the four of them in the lunchroom together in that scene. Give us anything canonically about this friendship, and I think it would have helped.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Also, unfortunate it's going down to a three-person group because, like, odd numbers of friends are always in kind of an inherently unstable thing, you know? Owo and Detmer are really just going to push Tilly out now, and it's going to suck.
Quit trying to make Robit happen, Tilly. It's not happening.
We'll react glance with each other. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of talking out of both sides of my mouth here in that, like, I'm critical of the way this show is, the way this episode is in evoking those feelings, but I will praise this episode's ability to make that happen under the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it had a high bar to clear and it cleared it.
Right. It's a bar that it set on itself though. Like that's what's so, it's so tough. Like it didn't have to make it this hard.
I know. But
it's like you and me, right?
Yeah.
This doesn't have to be so difficult.
Yeah. We've set a higher degree of difficulty for ourselves than we really need.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
I really liked it. I will admit that I kind of had a bad reaction to this episode the first time I watched it. I was disappointed that this was going to be a very derivative sci-fi story about AI being potentially dangerous issue. But the more I've thought about it, the more I've liked it. And on rewatching it and understanding that there was like some subtlety in that, and then thinking about that thing we've been talking about where there's kind of this motif in the season about characters having their pasts kind of brought back to the present in ways that they have to struggle against, that like this also feels like an element of that metaphor, you know, like something that we're always dealing with in our present day experience of the world is that like algorithms are doing unpredictable and shitty things. And I don't know, I think as an allegory, it's like more interesting than I thought the first time through. And the other thing I wanted to like briefly mention is like, the show is starting to have like the shot of the ship in orbit around a planet and then like pulling out and going to warp. And like that happens right at the beginning of this episode. And it's dumb, but that is like a thing about Star Trek that I love. I love getting those moments of the ship just like off to the adventure, you know?
Yeah.
And it's easy to do, but this show has like neglected to do it for a long time. And I noticed in rewatching the episode that it gives you a little moment to think about like what has been said in the scenes preceding it. Like, I feel like you can kind of digest a little bit when something like that happens. And this show is often so breathless that getting that little moment, I really appreciated it. And I thought it made me realize that there's something really smart about the way like old Star Trek is structured, and that this show is kind of like reconnecting with now. And I'm really glad that they are.
Yeah, it's like an issue of punctuation, right? Because the show, for not using that form of punctuation, instead begins a transition upside down and then right side ups itself. It carries your attention into figuring out your location.
Yeah.
Instead of unpacking the scene that came before and then moving on to the next.
Right. So I thought it was a good episode. Some weird omissions, like why didn't Nan just put her helmet back on? But overall, I thought it was pretty great.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
I just saw you look terrified because I have a question. Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
This is the show where I ask that question, Ben.
Oh,
how dare you! How dare you take? You know what?
Oh, so it wasn't fear. It was you were. I was stepping on your toes, and you were feeling betrayed.
I have so few jobs on this show, and that's one of them.
Okay. All right, turn it around on me, buddy.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I got a big laugh out of Saru when they come out of warp at Section 31 and they see all these mines. Saru was like, there is like a solid 5 minutes of people just getting on their moral high horse on the bridge where Admiral Bob has to tell Captain Pike that he's the best person in all of Starfleet, and that's why he was asked to sit out the war and stuff. But Saru, in the background, is like, mines? The Federation doesn't allow the use of mines!
That's a great line read, Ben. That feels pretty close to me.
God, that was funny to me. I really, really loved when Saru said that thing about the mines.
I'm glad you touched on that scene, Ben, because like the idea of the Enterprise being the Federation's Noah's Ark during the Klingon Federation War.
Yeah.
Like that realization hitting Pike and Pike taking that as a compliment.
Yeah, he just says, thank you.
Wow. Okay.
It's so funny. It was a funny scene.
You're going to have to repopulate the species, guys.
You look great, Chris.
We stocked the Enterprise with all of our best-looking officers.
Yeah. Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's that scene where, like, Arium tries to do computer both in her quarters when she's interrupted and both and then on the bridge later.
Yeah.
She's always interrupted by people, but the one interruption that is the most Shimoda-like is Nan's, like, sneaking behind, like, lurking on the bridge. How robotic are we to assume that Arium is? Like, I get that she doesn't have full use of her neck, like, mobility-wise.
She's a little twitchy.
She's got some blind spots, and Nan is most definitely in that blind spot, but Nan also not a very talented lurker. So I'm going to give my Shimoda to her.
Yeah.
Also, like, micro Shimoda to her inability to put on her helmet later.
Yeah.
As she's suffocating.
Indeed.
That's why you don't wear facial jewelry on the job. Like, you see it all the time when you're working around machines.
Yeah.
In a factory environment.
What happens when she goes, to, like, for an MRI? That thing is going to rip out of her face and across the room, you know?
Nan almost got her tie caught in the Xerox machine.
That is gonna. She's never gonna live that down.
It's a real Canadian workplace accident waiting to happen with her.
God, it felt like Canadian workplace accident when the thing got ripped out in the fight scene too. Like it was a real like, oh God.
Yeah.
And then like the holes are like all like black and charred looking.
Yeah,
they were red initially, and they like oxidized or something.
I love that that blood transition.
That
was
is
nice.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, good Shimoda, Adam.
What is coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next.
It looks like it involves a chair.
The next episode does heavily involve a chair. I was thinking
it's the episode where they lethally inject Michael Burnham.
I was imagining that those devices that they were placing around that chair were hologram generators, and they're gonna like make it look like she's on the bridge of something that she isn't.
Oh,
that's my theory. The other big thing that caught my attention is that Michael Burnham and Ash Tyler play a little tonsil hockey in the vasectomy there. So that's exciting to see them rekindling that romance.
They fit Dr. Culber with a jacked version of that suit also.
Yeah.
He's on an away mission for some reason.
Yeah. Who knows? It's interesting how much Michael Burnham like stood up for Ash Tyler in this episode. Like he's not really in the ep that much, but because I guess he's confined to quarters.
Yeah.
But like
he's looking out the window like, are those blade mines?
Cool minds. Yeah, so that'll be the next episode. Episode 10 of season 2 of Disco.
Yeah.
Only 5 episodes left, right?
It may...
Or is it 4? Are there 13 or 14 episodes this season?
We get 14 eps this season. The writer of this episode, Michelle Paradise, writes for the penultimate and final episode of this season.
Wow.
So it could be that the storyline that began here is going to be heavily related to those last two eps.
Wow. Cool. All right. Well, that will be the next episode. We will leave it with Rob's from here. And I'm sure he'll tell you one more time to go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And contribute to the greatest discovery in the Max Fun Drive.
We really appreciate your support. It's crucial that you support shows like these so that they can continue long into the future.
Yep. Bye.
MaximumFun.org/donate. That's where you go to pledge to show your support for a show like The Greatest Discovery. Let's just flat out say it, for The Greatest Discovery. And throw Greatest Generation and Friendly Fire on that list as well. The guys have already talked about it. It's wonderful. It helps us out. It makes it worthwhile. It puts some money in our pocket to keep us going for this show. I mean, I've got like, I don't know, off the top of my head, 17 podcasts. I focus on this one because I love working with these guys, and I love that we have a community of people that make it possible. It's great. It's wonderful. So let's make sure that we thank Adam Ragusea for the theme music. Isn't that wonderful as well? Yeah, it is. And if you want to reach out to us online, Ben is on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is at CutForTime. You can use the hashtag GreatestGen, GreatestDiscovery. I'm at Rob K. Schulte. If you think you know someone that might want to pledge to this, but hasn't listened to this episode, maybe, just send them a message saying, are you pledging? I'm pledging right now. Let's be pledge buddies. And join our discussion groups online. We've got them on Facebook, Reddit. We're all over the place. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.